All right, so we're in Building 10 again. Kevin, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, so we're going to be talking to you today. We're waiting for Dr. Sneath to show up.
Yeah, right? He called and said he's late, which is so rare for an evangelist. Usually
totally.
They're not on time to everything.
Especially Dr. Sneath, he's very punctual, he's English. I mean, he's very, very...
You think.
Oh, man.
But now we get the joy of seeing him, come trouncing down the hall. You know,
absolutely.
Like, I'm sorry for being late, I got a bit of trouble in my office.
Yes, sure, Dr. Sneath. So what are we talking about today? Like, what do you work on?
Well, my name is Kevin Moore. I'm a program manager on the Windows Presentation Foundation team.
Yeah.
And so I think Scott and Soma talked a little bit about some of the additions that happened in Orcus in 3.5, Visual Studio 2008, whichever way you want to call it.
Yeah.
And they talked some high levels about the tools and about some of the link stuff. And there were questions about, well, really, that's great, but I'm doing a lot of, WPF development, so
yeah.
It's new in WPF. And so the idea here is I did a talk for an internal group last week here at Microsoft, and again on Saturday, and so I have a bunch of content and some demos, and I can kind of talk through a bunch
Good.
Of details about about what we did in 3.5 for
cool.
WPF.
But at a high level, you did make a lot of changes, right? WPF is evolving along with everything else.
Absolutely. We kind of had a bar for compatibility for this release,
mm-hmm.
and so we obviously wanted to make sure that all the people that made apps that worked against the original release, 3.0,
mm-hmm.
NetFX, those apps continue to run. So we were restricted in some of the fixes that we do there.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we did a lot of work to kind of close some holes, make targeted additions, fix things that were causing people a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important things was just, kind of have good alignment with a bunch of existing Orcus features. Orcus is kind of including a bunch of cool stuff, like the added model and the CLR and link.
Yeah.
And we wanted to make sure that we aligned really well with those things.
Outstanding. So let's just talk briefly about what were some of the major pain points?
Major pain points?
That people were experiencing that you addressed,
It's lots of nitpicky things. We got a lot of really great feedback across a kind of a whole set of pretty innovative features.
Uh-huh.
And actually, do we have
Dr. Sneath.
How are you doing?
Very, very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Charles.
We definitely wanted to catch you on the way in.
Glad you're here. This is like one of those setup sort of things. I know.
Yeah,
how
exactly.
Usually it's us sort of, getting somebody else.
Exactly.
It's great that you ambushed
me. Well, we had different things today.
Yeah,
right?
There we go. Yes. Cool.
So I've already mocked your accent. It was really good.
Fantastic.
You did.
I'm so pleased to hear that.
Exactly.
Excellent. So we were just talking.
My accent was a parody in its own right, but there we go.
Right on. So we've already started this thing. We
Fantastic.
Were just talking about some of the small changes that have been made to address some of the more, nitpicky, as you said, but probably not huge pain points.
I mean, we've heard a range of feedback about a set of things. Thinking about some of the features that people were most excited about with WPF, like data, was a great example. And so people were really excited about our data model.
Mm-hmm.
They hit some perf issues when dealing with some XML stuff that we dealt with. They had some performance and behavior issues dealing
sure.
with ADO. We fixed that stuff and did a lot of work to improve that. People really liked the animation model, but noticed there were places where we had some glitches, and so we addressed some of those things. People really love the 3D model, and the fact that we now have 3D as an integrated story
Beautiful.
With the rest of the stuff in WPF, and now we have some stuff to make the 3D more accessible, because our first release was kind of a low-level set of APIs,
mm-hmm.
and we've done some work to bring it up to the abstraction level, so it's easier to code against 3D, just like it's 2D.
Outstanding. Well,
so,
let's go into the office and dig into this stuff.
Pretty cool. You've had a new office, Kevin.
Exactly.
Or you've had a window punched in your wall, one or the other.
I've
Exactly. So, you did a presentation to our internal fields last week, was it?
Yeah, it was Wednesday of last week, so
and,
a short week ago.
So this was kind of like our, we just share certain things with the internal sales and marketing organizations,
sure.
the technical evangelists out in the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
And this is our kind of one internal equivalent of the PDC that we run, which sort of is our chance to just make sure that everybody's up to the same page, know where we are, where things are going.
Excellent.
And this session is so cool, I just thought, let's just steal it and let's show it to the world. Let's kind of cover some of this stuff, because there's been lots of questions in the community. Well,
right.
I've heard lots about Link, I've heard lots about other kind of CLR enhancements,
mm-hmm.
But I haven't heard so much about what's going on with WPF. And yet there is some pretty
right.
interesting things, as Kevin's already mentioned. So Kevin, you can just do your right. presentation almost.
And I should start with a disclaimer that I got this feedback at Tech Ready Which is the internal event last week, which was, you know, a lot of the content I'm talking about here is really assumes knowledge. Like, mm-hmm. I'll talk about some issues and some things we cleaned up, but if you've never dealt with ADO and MPF, or if you've never dealt with add-ins or XBAPs, like, why certain things are cool might not be apparent. And so, you know, it might give you a good reason to go dig in further if you're new. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a lot of videos people have done, you know, on 3D, cool. the 3D toolkit people have talked about. Yeah. Rob Relia has some great talks on XAML, Chris Anderson. So look at those things. But for those that are familiar with OPF, hopefully this will be a set of things where, like, yes, I've hit that issue, and it's good that it's being addressed.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Good.
So we can dig in here.
Okay.
So I'm actually just reusing the slides. From the event, and we have some demos here in a second. So a big set of stuff, one of the biggest requests we got was around XBAPs. And people really enjoyed our XBAP model. Mm-hmm. This is the idea that we can deploy an application in browser. And so actually, we might even just zoom in on this this machine over here.
Okay.
I'll full disclosure, I'm cheating a little bit. I'm terminal serviced into my laptop.
Right
I haven't
on.
Quite jumped over to installing the Orcus bits in my desktop, but we'll do that soon. So we'll see here. This is an Internet Explorer application and an XBAP. And so this content is actually WPF. So I'll admit this is not the sexiest WPF application, but you'll notice I have a form here, and I can fill in some data. My crazy model for an agent ID and submit it. Mm-hmm. I'll just add a bunch here as an example. Mm-hmm. So you notice that, you know, this is an in-browser application. I just added some data. Now let's jump over, and you'll notice a slightly different browser with a slightly different logo.
You've reskinned Internet Explorer and changed the title and changed the icon.
Exactly. This circling red thing probably denotes evil of some sort. No, this is Firefox, IE team is doing a lot of great work to make the browser much better, but there are some people that, for various reasons, like using other browsers, and from our perspective, that's all goodness, right? ActiveX controls were great in Firefox, and so we had a lot of requests to make sure that our XBAP model worked really well in Firefox.
Mm-hmm. And XBAPs, you know, it's kind of interesting to note this kind of in-browser kind of WPF model. Mm-hmm. It's been really successful in some places, other places... not so much, and it's kind of gone almost along a kind of regional bias.
Yeah.
There have been a few notable successes of XBAPs in places like the British Library app. I'm sure you've seen.
Yes, absolutely.
That app is an XBAP, so it's you know, 3D delivered via the browser. It's hard to do that with any other kind of technology out there. Where we've seen lots of interest in XBAPs is in the Far East, actually. So Japan, China, both of those two countries have done a load of really interesting XBAP applications. Mm-hmm. There's one big zoo in Japan that's got this amazing kind of spinning globe, and you can kind of go on a tour through various biomes and click on buttons to see different animals in their regions. And that's, again, the kind of app that is pretty hard to do with any other technology out there on the browser, because it's such an intrinsically 3D application, and that's a good example of where the XBAP sort of model.
So let me ask this question, because I think there is a little bit of confusion, right, mm-hmm. in the sense that we now have Soberlight 1.1 alpha,
right,
which gives us the full power of a not too stripped down CLR, where we can do XAML, mm-hmm. and we can do WPF in a sense, right? WPFE is what it used to be.
Right.
Can we just really quickly address, like, when would I do XBAP, when would I go Soberlight?
Right, right.
I think it's a good,
it's
fair
a,
question.
It's a very fair question. So, I mean, firstly, you know, one key constraint is that XBAPs, as part of WPF, they're released, you can actually do them legitimately. So, so the 1.1 alpha doesn't have a go-live license with it, so, you know, actually breaking terms of license to push that one out. But I guess your question is more about sort of in the longer term, right? And I think, you know, where Silverlight is really of intrinsic value is whenever you're kind of pushing a site out to the broad web community at large, you mm-hmm. can't, you know, be so bold as to say, well, you have to be running Windows and you have to be running historically IE or now at least we've added Firefox. Mm-hmm. That kind of constrains it naturally to a certain set of users. It's great for like an intranet site where you mm-hmm. want to do kind of deployments that are easy to deploy. It's great in certain scenarios where you can put that level of minimum system bar on
sure.
it. You know, in certain situations, like a banking client, you might say, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. You might say, actually, this is my high-end experience, and I'm going to create an HTML experience for those who don't have the ability to run an XBAP, a XAML browser application.
Very cool.
Silverlight is you know, it's very much more ubiquitous. It's something that contains a subset of the capabilities. It doesn't have the 3D.
Sure.
In this first release, you know, we've really optimized around a very, very small download, so that inevitably kind of reduces the feature set. So, you know, if you can live with that sacrificed feature set, but you want to reach a broad audience, and reach is really what you're about, then Silverlight is really the choice there.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate the clearing that up for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of the demo, like, I wanted to show here quickly.
Sure, please.
I clicked on the refresh button here, and you'll notice that the set of data I inputted in my Internet Explorer browser came up in Firefox. This is another point I'll discuss here in a second, which is actually what I'm doing here is I'm actually calling out using Indigo. And so this is actually work that WPF did not do in this release. Mm-hmm. Our friends over in the Windows Communication Foundation team, I'm sorry, I let Indigo slip.
No problem.
They did some work to make sure that their basic HTTP binding for Indigo worked via partial trust. Nice. And so that's actually a good point to bring up kind of about XBAPs, continuing some stuff that Tim said, was that, you know, people could do 3D now in the browser, right? You could build some ActiveX control and deploy it and use DirectX. People have done those things. Mm-hmm. But ActiveX is pretty heavyweight. It's actually an install. It requires you to actually install some stuff on your machine. Mm-hmm. It elevates to administrator privileges. But some stuff is potentially scary. Mm-hmm. What's really, really nice about WPF is we have this very rich set of APIs around 3D and text and controls. And all those things are available via this XBAP model and no installation. And so you get all the benefit of the web model where it's like, you know, I navigate away, I can forget about it, the browser will clean it up afterwards, but I get the richness of WPF. And so in terms of 3D and our data binding stack and our tech stack, video, all that kind of comes along. And so having those together is really nice. You can really move, for the most part, huge desktop experiences and, you know, have the great browser model for the interaction. So it's kind of a best of both worlds in my mind.
Excellent.
So we talked about two things, Firefox and our web services integration. Mm-hmm. One final thing I wanted to show real quick is, actually we'll go back to the other browser. You'll notice I have some validation, like it's a little mad at me for my input, and it has a text string over here saying, you know, the first name, the last name can't be blank, and I need a valid ID. So I'll type those in quick, and you'll notice the those go away. Mm-hmm. So this is a very simple thing, and for those that build data models, this is the kind of feature they really care about. We had a validation model in WPF in our first release, mm-hmm. and that validation model, basically, you could plug in providers for the validation model and say, you know, if my setter throws an exception, I want validation information. Or I could plug in the UI and say, I could write some custom validation logic to say, if the string's not, you know, not a certain size, put a validation error. That's really bad factoring in a lot of ways, because what people really want is they want their business object level to know about that validation logic. The business object should know that the name has to be a certain length. Mm-hmm. To repeat that information at the UI layer is duplication first, and then keeping your business object layer and your UI layer synchronized is now an issue. And so actually, it's a pretty obscure API, but for those that build business objects, they really care. It's called iDataErrorInfo. It's actually an API that exists to implement on your data layer to say, hey, this object can advertise and say when a set was incorrect and if the value is incorrect.
Nice.
And so we support that now in binding. And so those that have read Rocky's books, Rocky Loftcourt, CSLA, he talks a lot about this validation model and keeping your validation model centralized, and now we have a great model for integrating with that set of stuff through this interface.
So to be clear, we had iDataErrorInfo, that was an interface that we had in previous releases.
This is like the first release of the framework supported in WinForms.
But the big distinction here is that we now have support for it within the binding
model
declaration of
WPF. And it plugs in the existing validation model. So if you've already used validation in WPF, you're rolling with the validation model in WPF, this is just kind of a nice add-on. So you just flag your binding and say, pay binding, pay attention to these errors, and if the object implements that interface, you're good to go. And so a nice little add-on.
And how much customization have you got over the actual look of that validation error? I mean, there you had the label and a tooltip.
And in all honesty, I've done nothing here, like very little. the cool thing, though, is like the validation model is, you know, the red rectangle is defined by a style, uh-huh. and so you can change that style. You can get rid of the red rectangle if you don't like the red rectangle.
Okay.
I'm actually binding to that object and getting the validation errors off it because it's an attached property. And so there's all, I mean, we didn't hardwire it. It's very flexible.
Right.
It uses our styling model and our templating model. And so
that message is just a label that's data bound to the validation error?
Yeah, actually, this message has a binding that's bound to this control's validation attached property.
And, okay.
We have a lot to cover, so I won't get too much into the XAML, but I'll post the code. People can take a look. So back over here, kind of walking through the slides quick. You know, we talked about Firefox. Cookie support was another really big one. We have a bunch of work in WPF places where the WPF goes and makes requests to the web server. You know, data does that if you're using an XML data provider. If you wire up an image control or you're going to download XAML, we make those requests. Well, you'd like that the original request that came down, there's cookie information involved. You'd like all the requests that WPF makes to have the same cookie information. Mm-hmm. And so now we support that as well. So if you're doing authentication with cookies, nice. Or keeping stack together with cookies, we have that together. Something I'll cover in the next demo is support for add-in. And this is really, really cool if you want to make an extensible application. Mm-hmm. And the way I always think about this, you know, the first time I ever dealt with add-ins was kind of Winamp. You know, you can plug in those external right. visualizers and right. things. It actually is a really tough problem because mm-hmm. you'd like to load that add-in in a way that that add-in can't do anything dangerous. It's like, mm-hmm. here's the three interfaces that add-in talks through, and that's all they can talk through. And it shouldn't be able to create files in the file system or do anything else. You want that to be really, really well contained. Mm-hmm. And so people were hacking their own model for that, and it ended up being a very difficult thing, and right. they tended not to do it very well.
Right.
And so the CLR team has actually done some amazing work in 3.5 to build this model. Mm-hmm. And then WPF layered on top of it mm-hmm. so that you can have the same model with visualization. So instead of just, you know, you can imagine a math library plugging in and doing math equations. Mm-hmm. That's kind of boring. You know, doing controls is a much cooler thing. And so we support that now,
right.
which is really nice. And then we talked about, you know, web services support. Before, sure. you could do RevRequest or ASMX web services, but now we have full support for WCF.
Nice.
Which, especially for people doing line of business stuff, that mm-hmm. when he's Indigo on
yeah.
the server,
yeah.
Lots of goodness.
It was a big request.
Huge
request.
Turning
to a marketing person, Kevin. Huge better together story.
Exactly. Well, this is clearly for an internal.
Better
<you know>?
Together.
Better together, right?
Oh, man.
WCF plus WPF equals WCPF. I don't know. And so let's walk through some data stuff really quickly. Again,
sure.
kind of talking about things that if you've used data binding in WPF, you probably hit. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the business object level validation mm-hmm. Using IDataInfo, which is super nice.
Mm-hmm.
We have better debugging support. This is actually a huge issue that people run into a lot, which is, you know, we have bindings all over our controls, you have bindings all over your application,
yeah.
and, you know, binding has data context and a bunch of stuff's kind of happening under the covers,
yeah.
and a lot of people will do a binding and try to get the first name of something, and it
right.
just doesn't work, and
right.
they don't know why.
Right, right.
And we have tracing support in the first release, and you could
uh-huh.
turn on tracing, but then you get tracing for the whole application, every
right.
binding.
Right.
It's kind of like, you know, you have a million little rocks, and you're looking for one.
Right.
And so
right.
now we actually have the ability to say, on one specific binding, I want to turn tracing on.
Excellent.
Uh-huh.
And when you turn on that one tracing on that binding, then that binding is amazingly verbose about what it's doing,
right.
but nothing else.
Right.
And so you can kind of see, where is that binding falling down?
So for somebody like me who writes a lot of buggy code, that's
no, yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is kind of really key because as you say, usually in 3.0 when your binding fails, it doesn't even give you an error message. It doesn't crash, which is good because otherwise my app
right.
would be crashing.
Sometimes data is slow and you don't
yeah.
want to blow
yeah.
up every time you can't
yeah.
get something. Right?
So where does it put this output to? Does it still go to like the output window in Visual Studio?
Yeah, so
or?
Tracing by default, if you're in debug mode,
mm-hmm.
Goes to the debug output. And so you get debug output. My understanding is if you leave it in the application, there's actually ways for an RTM bits to plug in and get tracing information for debugging.
Okay. Uh-huh.
So it'd be really good if you're building an app to be conscious of this. This is kind of a design time feature,
mm-hmm.
really. And so unless you have issues where you want to help customers debug stuff,
yeah.
This is something you probably remove once you figure
right.
out your error.
Otherwise, you
sure.
get the kind of debugger spew of just
exactly.
10,000 things.
And we do, we're really smart that if tracing isn't enabled or someone's not plugged up to the tracing output,
uh-huh.
we don't waste CPU generating the tracing.
Right, right.
But it's still good to, you know, apply
right.
it.
And so this is an attached property you apply to the object you want to...
To the binding.
To the binding itself,
yeah.
rather than to either the source or the destination.
You say, this binding,
uh-huh.
you know, what are you doing? And you can
right,
say,
right.
you set to high, and it'll tell you everything.
Okay.
Which is really good.
I'm taking a rest.
Exactly. And then better support for DBNull is a big one for those that are dealing with ADO again.
Uh-huh.
We had some interesting stuff with ADO in the past, and so that's much better.
But that actually brings up an interesting point, because there is a mismatch between CLR types and SQL types. So you have SQL data types and you have CLR types. There's not a lot of similarity, or should I say parity. Maybe that's not even right. Dr. Sneath, you're in the room. The word I'm trying to say is a lot of the types that are in that are native SQL don't necessarily map directly to CLR types. They're working on that.
Well, you have people a SQL data types sort of namespace, which is separate to the thing. But and then there's things like nullables that bridge that gap greatly.
Right.
But you're talking here about...
Well, and this is actually a really interesting thing. So basically, you know, it would be good if binding into PF could be very generic, and if every implementation in Microsoft could be very generic.
Right, right. So we have some technology for that.
Yeah. Well, and it turns out with ADO... They you know, use general plumbing. This is going to get a little deeper, actually, now.
Great.
They use some plumbing that exists in the CLR called type descriptors and property descriptors. And so that's kind of an abstract way, because right now you actually walk up when you bind and you say, you know, data table dot, you know, some row dot first name. Mm-hmm. First name doesn't exist on data row, but it's like, it's inferred. It's kind of an implied property using property descriptor. So you can imagine an order count thing. And we can say, okay, what's your order count? And it'll give us back this property descriptor. So the CLR property doesn't really exist, but the way our binding engine works can work as though there's a real property there.
Right.
So the weird thing, though, is if you ask customer count, what's your type? It says int. And so we'll say, okay, it's an int. So if null is provided in a binding, we're like, I can't map a null to an int because you have a reference type and a value type, and we blow up. And so what we did basically was did some work to say, no, we know these EDO guys, and even though they say the customer, you know, is integer, we know that, you know, that thing specifically can support null.
Right.
And we can ask other questions to see, is this a nullable column in the database? Okay. And so a subtle, silly little plumbing thing, but it really matters for, you know, for people that want to do binding to ADO. And this is something that WinForms got right. And so now we support
you. You don't do that using a nullable int type, you know, like in query. You do some other route.
Well, and that's actually because ADO. ADO actually doesn't advertise that it's a nullable int.
Right.
It advertises its type as integer.
Right.
So and so we had to announce, like, okay, most property descriptors will treat generically, but we know this ADO property descriptor behaves a little more differently.
Right.
And so we'll do the right thing.
Right.
Cool.
So those integration things, customers start playing, we get the feedback, we fix it.
Good. Good.
Excellent.
We'll go. Actually, we can go to the demo for this thing. We'll come back though. So support for XLink is huge. Obviously, the Link guys have done a lot of great work, making sure we party with that stuff is good. And I'll talk about that in a second. We actually improved our performance substantially for IEnumerable. And so, you know, there's, you know, people that understand the hierarchy, there's Enumerable, then, you know, I collection, I list up the stack. Mm. If you're doing queries in Link, you get IEnumerables back. That's kind of the backing model for Link. In our first implementation, we tried to be clever and not use a lot of memory, and so we just re-enumerated. Like, if you asked for 5, 6, 7, and then asked for 1 again, we'd restart the enumeration, reset, and go again. And so people were getting re-enumerated many, many times. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of a slow way to access stuff. So what we did was we actually said, you know, clever idea to save memory in V1, given feedback, it's probably better to cache it. Mm-hmm. So what we do is, if you ask, we'll snapshot the IEnumerable.
Okay.
Which for performance is substantially better for most cases, especially a small enumerable.
Right.
People should certainly keep in mind that, you know, if they're enumerating over every zip code in the United States or something, and it's a long collection, we're going to cache that in snapshots.
Right.
So be careful with your performance. If you can return us and give us an I list or an I binding list, that's a much better thing to give us because we don't have to snapshot it then. We can just go access the items directly.
Right.
And if actually you look at XLink, and Link in general, there's a lot of extension methods that exist, and a lot of them actually say to list or to binding list.
Right.
And so get a list out of it instead of enumerable, and we don't have to. We won't snapshot it. Link will handle snapshotting it and do it and efficient for that domain.
Right.
And so little things to keep in mind for people as they're hacking around. You know, be careful with enumerable support, but we have better support in 3.5.
Great.
This is all these little exciting minutia that if you've dealt with MPF, you understand.
Yeah.
Better performance for XML DOM, especially for simple paths. There's lots of people that were building kind of these dynamic things over the DOM. So, you know, XLink is this new model for XML that came out in 3.5. The original model for XML above XML Reader Writer was we called XML DOM. It's this XML element, XML document, that set of stuff. Natively, since that's all that existed in the first release, that's what WPF binding wired against was the XML DOM. And if people were going in and changing those documents under the covers, we'd respond to those changes, but we could have been more efficient. It turns out that when the DOM, anything in the DOM changes, you get a bunch of events all over, and you're not sure exactly what changed. And so to do things accurately, you want to refresh everything. And refreshing everything is pretty expensive.
Right.
And so what we realized is for certain simple XPaths, we could guess. And so we're doing that now, and we have orders of magnitude improved performance in some scenarios for XML, which makes lots of people happy.
Yeah.
And then kind of in the same realm of, you know, our legacy or older data models, we have, you know, data set. And so people using ADO, There's actually some issues with how Dataset implemented some row functionality. We fixed that. And so we have substantially better performance and better behavior over Dataset. Mm-hmm. Kind of a note is that those playing with the beta 2 bits of Orcus won't see that benefit because ADL got their fix in and we didn't because we had to wait for them to check in before we could check in. Right. And so we had to fix some stuff. So you won't see that in beta 2, but you'll see it afterwards. Uh-huh. So let's, before we get into that stuff, let's look at Xlink just really quickly. Oh, this is the things you don't like to see, is the designer not loading. Let's, this is why it's still beta. We'll double-click and see if it runs. Reload the designer. Oh, see, these are the integration things you run into, because it turns out here, I actually have a query down here that the designer doesn't expect.
Right.
So we'll get that bug fixed before we ship. Exactly, it's beta.
Yeah, it's beta.
So I just wanted to show real quick. We'll load some code up here. Mm-hmm. I basically load up an app, and I point it, and I have it load up my CS proj file, the proj file of this application, actually, and skip some minutia here, and I just go and I create an X document. So this is an X link document over that XML.
Right. And the CS proj files are just an XML structure.
It's all XML, right?
Fair enough.
XML's goodness. You can parse and party over all this stuff. And then what I do is I load it in the data context. So for all these controls, we have a list box here, a list box, a tree view, a list box. These are all effectively bound to that document. And so you'll see some bindings here. I bind to an elements property. Mm-hmm. What this says is get the first level elements off that the root element. So mm-hmm. just the first level children. This is descendants. This is every element and kind of walks down recursively.
Right.
Every element in that document. This, I get elements again, but you notice I actually bind it to a tree.
Right.
And I define a hierarchical data template to actually walk in and give a
right.
tree map of all the elements.
Right.
And this last one I say, go get all the descendants, so go recursively, uh-huh. but actually grab out the descendants that are reference.
Okay.
So every reference element.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, people might be asking, what's this funky squiggly brace syntax? This is actually how you denote a namespace, because mm-hmm. XML has namespaces, references in, you know, our MS build namespace,
right.
and so this is how you denote a namespace. Something else to kind of mention for people that have played with WPF and binding and XML before, that kind of set of things, is you'll notice we don't use XPath, we actually use
mm-hmm.
path.
Mm-hmm.
And so XPath, the XPath syntax worked and was hardwired against the DOM implementation, XML element, XML node.
Right.
Path syntax is actually over CLR.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did in this release was we actually worked with the Xlink team to expose a set of CLR properties that we could bind against instead mm-hmm. of XPath. And it turns out CLR is much easier to understand. Every time I did an XPath, I had to go look up how XPath works.
Yeah.
It's much more straightforward
yeah.
for this.
Excellent.
Although you get more curly braces in WPF.
Exactly. And, you know, no ats and weird dot, dot, dot
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
One thing to keep in mind for everyone that's, you know, there's a lot of people that are very happy with Reflector and kind of look at Reflector. I know I am. The properties defined here actually aren't in the object. We use that property descriptor trick I talked about,
okay.
like ADO does.
Yeah, yeah.
And so they're kind of synthetic properties.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at XML, XNode, or XElement,
right.
you won't see these properties there,
right.
but they're there. And
right.
we'll document kind
right.
of how to use that stuff.
Right.
So
you better share this.
Exactly. We'll run it real quick. And so what you'll see here, I'll let Charles zoom in a little bit.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I have my XML document kind of loaded up here. That's my proj file.
That's the raw content.
That's
yeah.
the proj file. And you'll see my bindings work. And so uh-huh. here are the first level elements that kind of pulled out of there.
Mm-hmm.
Here's all the descendant elements. And obviously there's a bunch more because it's kind of recursing down
mm-hmm.
all the elements that exist. Here's using the exact same tree of the first one, but I actually used our tree view. And so you notice that we actually,
nice.
Using a hierarchical data template, actually get the you know
right.
the hierarchy here.
Right.
And finally, I actually did that binding, and you notice we're just basically harvesting all the reference things
mm-hmm.
Out of the document and showing the set of stuff. And so what's really nice about this, again, the demo's not all that exciting, but for those doing XML programming, those that are really excited about Xlink, it's all about the better together in the
mm-hmm.
spectrum. You
mm-hmm.
know, if you're going to use Link, we want to make sure the perf was good. If you're using Xlink,
right.
we want to make sure that you can bind to it natively without having to redirect it to something else.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be really bad if you had to take Xlink and then push it out to an XML document
right.
just to bind it.
Right, right.
And so we tried to clean that all up so it was really consistent. So this is all about kind of better together with
yeah,
all
this. Yeah, that's really good. Now, what if you wanted to do a slightly more complex sort of Xlink query? Let's say you want to find all the items groups that contain a build, you know, build child element. Can you do that kind of thing with this?
So,
on the fly.
So, right now, you scare me, Tim. So it's kind of two models. Like, uh-huh. WPF has always been a declarative model for how we do binding and everything else.
Right.
There's a set of stuff, like the ability to execute a query, that, you know, it's a combination of we don't support it and Xlang doesn't support it, right? Like, the ability to, here's an arbitrary string and parse.
Yes.
But it's actually very straightforward with link APIs. You get completion and all the other fun stuff in C#.
Right, right.
Write your Xlang query, you know, in your C# or your VB.NET code.
Yep.
You get your enumerable out, and then set that enumerable to either the data context or the item source.
Right.
And then, you know, once you have that, you know, list of, you know, X elements in your list box, binding will work. And you can create a data template of those things, and all the stuff you're used to doing, you could do. But
so
if
you build your query in code, then bind to it, and then you can just back to where we are.
And if you want to go access, you know, simple attributes or elements or access elements by name and that sort of stuff, you can do all those simple things in markup, which is much simpler than having to make a new object to represent that XML thing.
Yeah.
You can do that binding. And so we think that combination will actually be really good.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Excellent. Now, one quick question, since we're talking about link, I wanted to throw out one of my potentially dumb comments. is link supports any structured data, right? I mean, so you have link over XML, link to SQL, link to Amazon, link to pretty much, you know, it's designed to be linked to something, right?
Right.
So
like,
my question is, you guys don't care about those semantics, those details, right? So I can use WPF for using link to Amazon, for example, and that's my data binding.
Absolutely.
I'm asking that.
Absolutely, and that's actually a good point in terms of I think where the directions of platforms are going in Microsoft, and what's really exciting is, like, in the end of the day, you don't necessarily want your UI layer to know about Amazon Web Services or, you know, nuances of any data layer. Like, we built WPF to understand CLR objects really good, and binding in particular, we understand collections, we understand properties, we understand indexers. If you give us those things, we can party over that.
Mm-hmm.
And so our friends in the data layer business, like, whether they're using Indigo or whatever else, as long as they return objects that are those bindable things with properties and with indexers, you know, we interface really nicely.
Nice.
And so we let the data layer guys go run and do really cool stuff.
Yeah.
We talk occasionally to make sure there's good gelling and these things like enumerable to make sure we have good performance.
Mm-hmm.
But then the spectrum is really clean. And so go get any data layer you want. We've done a lot of work in WPF to make sure it's bindable.
Outstanding.
Good.
So moving happily along to something that people tend to be pretty excited about is additions in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can actually step back here and let me close up a few of my Visual Studio windows and XBAPs I won't need. So actually, let me just refresh this real quick to make sure I have data and my server hasn't restarted or anything crazy. Oh, my server did restart. So that's good. Let me just go add a bunch of data. I actually have a button called add a bunch for my data. And so, you know, random customer counts. So that's all been running. And we'll close up the XBAP demo.
That was your WCF server rather than, you're not indicating that the whole Windows cabal is...
No. Just this local server I'm running here. And we'll load up this app. And so, again, I can do pretty UI. People have seen the bag of tricks. It's nice. Not so pretty UI. It's all kind of functional here. We're talking about a lot of plumbing.
You don't make good UI. I mean, Kevin Button is not pretty, but it's... But
I didn't make it. It was Robbie who made that.
As an asset, you're not necessarily the button.
So I wanted to show real quick what I did. You know, I clicked this button, find add-ins, this list box magically populated with three strings. I clicked on one, I clicked load, and here's, you know, an add-in. This might look, you know, exactly, my naming, just like my UI design, my naming is really good. And so this should actually look like... stuff we've seen actually in the XBAP, right? It's the exact same control, actually.
Right.
So what happened here? Well, this is a combination of a bunch of cool functionality that exists in the add-in model, the scalar model, because it's new in Orcus, and stuff that we've done. So in terms of what the add-in model allows is, you know, when I click Find Add-ins, basically what I do is I say, I give the add-in model a folder, and I say, start at this folder, and go give me add-ins that implement this interface. And I kind of pass in a type. And the add-in model is smart. It goes recursively down, looks for DLLs, sees if those DLLs have types in them that are public, that implement this interface, this contract.
That you've chosen. It's your
that I've chosen. Exactly. My contract. And it returns me those as tokens.
Right.
And so I get this nice list. And actually, they do a great job with their two-string, and so just bind it right into a list box in OPF. It's actually pretty straightforward. And then when I click load add-in, what I do is I go up to that token, and I say, give me that add-in. Give me an instance of that add-in. And then there's actually a model to say, give me UI.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we did was a bunch of work to say, if you have a control, it's kind of run in the sandbox and give us a pointer to the UI, and actually that pointer's passed as an HWind, so like the standard kind of windowing model. Mm-hmm. And then we'll wrap that in something that looks like a control. And I just pop that control in my tab control here. But the cool thing is, so even if you look at this, you know, code, it looks like it's, you know, it looks like it's all pretty integrated, and actually can load the cool add-in. And you'll see I have a slightly different visualization here. This actually uses the tree map control on the bag of tricks.
Yes.
And so, you know, the size is proportionate to the customer count. Again, really pretty UI, but just kind of showing an example. So,
this isn't looking very 3D, Kevin.
No, but we're going to start with plumbing, and this is the add-in model. It's important. It's actually really important because people want to have a model where they can do, you know, it's like, imagine you're a financial institution, right? And you're doing stock analysis.
Oh, yeah, this is
and
really
your traders are running, and they're accessing very kind of important, you know, get sued for billions of dollars kind of information.
Right.
You'd love to have an app model that says, you know, I'd love to plug in custom visualizations to look at all this stock data every day.
Right.
But if you grab up some random DLL from some random company, how do I know that DLL doesn't access the file system or the registry or the network?
Right.
Like, you don't know.
Right.
You want a model, say, only these few things. And so the CLR provided that model, and now we get a model to expose UI.
Uh-huh.
And so kind of this model, like, you know, will 90% of customers for WPF be excited about this? No. But the 5% who care, really, really care.
Yeah,
and now we have a model for doing that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Great.
And so, you know, there's two pieces of UI. The explanation here is this is actually an HWind, and so you can't, like, do, you know, bitmap effects or opacity. Like, it's restricted what you can do with the add-in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, put it in a tab control, it works fine. And now let's load the awesome add-in, and guess what this one is? Drum roll.
3D.
And 3D. So again, we've seen more pretty 3D. It's not so much the visualization here, it's what's possible.
Right.
And so you notice I'll click here, and we'll get an animation in, and kind of fade out.
Nice.
It's more jerky than I'd like, but again, we're running over TS, and so not perfect. And you'll notice we have a, you know, a 2D plane, there's opacity going through, mapped to 3D at a slight angle.
Yeah.
You notice it's interactive.
So this is kind of the magic sort of nirvana sort of thing that we've been waiting for in some ways with 3D, the ability to not just display boxes and vertices, but to be able to overlay 2D UI or place 2D UI within the 3D surface.
And again, you know, this is really for people that have already done 3D into PF and tried to integrate 2D and 3D.
Uh-huh.
There's lots of walls they've hit. And if you look back on the videos, I think earlier this year we talked about the 3D toolkit.
We did, yes.
This is kind of formalizing that sort of stuff. So we're shipping it now and that sort of tricks.
So if you need to do this right now today, you can go to Codeplex and go to that 3D tools project, download something that does the job. What we've done here is turned into real released product with the full weight of Microsoft support.
And it'll be in Orcus, exactly.
Yeah.
So actually, let's look at code here real quick. and of course, I need to remember where everything was. Awesome add-in, tree map. Here we go. And so we have this tree map 3D. I want to show, we actually introduce a new class.
UI element 3D.
Exactly. And so actually, if we kind of go over these slides here. And so if you think about what we shipped in kind of the first release, you know, dependency object, and then this is kind of the control hierarchy.
Standard
and so controls down here. We always joke that UI element introduces life into stuff. And life is an acronym that represents layout, input, focus, and events.
Mm-hmm.
Now, layout in 2D is a pretty... You can guess how that would work. Layout in 3D, we didn't quite get there. It's kind of complicated.
Right.
But we have IF. So, we have IF. And so if you look down kind of the set of things in 3D now... just like there's the corollary visual, we now have UI element 3D. And so if we actually go back to code here, you'll see that I created this tree map control. Actually, it wasn't me. It was Kurt that did this. I won't claim credit. he created this UI element 3D. And so a couple examples here, you'll notice command bindings. And so commanding didn't work in 3D now. Now it works in 3D. Something else that you'll look at that people will be really excited about is... Look, I'm overriding on mouse down.
Right.
Again, you had to manage all your input via the viewport before.
Yeah.
But now you actually say, I want this object to be clickable, override mouse down, just like you would in any other kind of element.
Yes.
Beautiful.
And something else I wanted to show really quickly was, let's actually load up the XAML here. And scroll down a bit. So he created this, you know, transition 3D control, and this is actually a great example of good XAML too. You can use, you know, mix these things up.
Yeah.
So this is the thing that kind of flew in that 2D UI and flew back, right?
Okay, I thought you'd done that by hand.
No, he implemented the control, and so this control is actually a 2D control.
Uh-huh.
But what it does is it takes a UI element as a child. Uh-huh. And so we put UI in here. And what you'll notice is I actually set up a stack panel that I can actually, you know, name and reference from the code, set up a data context. But all the things like binding all work. And I had to do no special work to mm-hmm. make this interactive. It mm-hmm. just was interactive. And so right. under the code, I kind of grab this element and turn it into a brush. But all the interaction and everything just kind of flows through. And so now you can really think about coding against 3D like you think coding against 2D.
Right.
Events and
right.
commanding and input.
Right.
And you can layer 2D on 3D and the input goes through and routed right. events go through and commands go
right.
through.
Right.
And so really it's kind of bringing the abstraction level up in the 3D realm to
yeah.
catch up with most in 2D. You know,
yeah.
we don't have
yeah.
a framework element 3D. We don't have triggers
right.
and styles yet. There's
right.
some stuff and templates people have asked about. We haven't quite got there. But core things like input
yeah.
Yeah. and kind of resource lookups and things,
yeah.
that's all there.
Yeah.
And people will be really excited to get that functionality.
Yeah. And again, it's not that you can't do these things in any other kind of application platform. I mean, you could easily write something. You could write that in DirectX, but it wouldn't be easy to write it. I mean, there's a heck of a lot of work there. Putting those kind of, you know, the sliders and the controls on that would be, you know, it's a lot of work, those kind of things.
And making it
does not make it easy to do that kind of
and making it data bindable and all that stuff
right,
and integrating
right,
with, like
right.
it's really the integration that's
yeah.
was always the nice thing about WPF. You don't have to interrupt
yeah.
the DX
right.
and now that integration is even higher because
right.
now our 2D model and 3D model
right.
party together really
right.
really nice.
And this, I mean, it's easy also to think of this as being a bit sort of gratuitous. You know, a lot of people have the sense that UI in 3D space is this kind of, you know, only for use of, on, you know, a movie like Minority Report or something
right.
like that. But I think this starts to kind of point at the kinds of scenario that become interesting here. I saw another demo from another company just recently, which was another example of this. They had a 3D space, but they wanted to make sure that, you know, it was possible to manipulate objects in the 3D space. So they had sliders and controls around that. But equally, they wanted them to be kind of pointing in a certain orientation no matter which way you were kind of looking at the object. And so those kind of things, again, being able to
right.
lay things in 3D spaces and be able to control and manipulate whilst still having the full richness of an object like a slider. There's no difference. That's not
right.
like a different slider to the one you'd have on a flat 2D form, right?
And I could put, you know, buttons or a tree view or whatever else inside that.
Right.
Actually, I could put another 3D viewport to put 3D inside the 2D inside the, like...
Right. Now you're back to gratuitous Minority Report again.
But I think to think about, actually, even looking at the sample, the tree map was, you know, I think a lot of people dig into 3D and they're like, oh, I'm going to do like a first-person shooter and
yeah.
I'm going to make a shopping application where it's
yeah.
like Quake and I'm going to blow
right,
up it,
right.
and I'm, you know, I'm going to shoot at my box of cereal to buy it,
yeah.
you know? And, like, my mom doesn't understand the notion of, like, you know, is my mouse inverted for looking up, looking down,
right,
like that sort
right.
of things?
Although it's tempting to take the drudge out of the grocery store.
Exactly, if you want, you know, shooting your walnuts before you buy them would be
fun. Quite fun.
But, like, there are things, like, with this kind of visualization with the tree map
yeah.
that worked really well. Like,
yeah.
you know, anyone can figure that out looking at it.
Yeah.
And you click, and you see this nice 3D transition where 2D UI comes in.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
at an angle. It looks cool. It flies back. Like, it's interesting. But I
yeah.
have to, like, learn some kind of 3D navigation paradigm to understand it.
Yeah.
It adds to the polish of the app.
Yeah,
like,
definitely.
I could use a 2D tree map, but, like,
right.
it might be completely obvious what, you know, the highest value is. And
right.
so mm-hmm. using the 3D one, like, actually adds a lot of value there.
Right.
And so
right.
This is kind of my evangelism point, which is, you know, if you can dig into 3D and use it, like, think about those interaction models. Like, if,
yeah.
if your target audience is, like, the Quake generation, then maybe
yeah.
you want to, you know, walk around and,
yeah.
and have that model. But
yeah.
you can do 3D in interesting ways, especially
yeah.
now that 2D and 3D integrate better together.
Sure.
And, you know, bring in an options dialog on a 3D surface off to the side and let someone pick and close without
sure.
having to worry about, like, oh, if I click and drag, like, does it flip upside down and how do I turn it back around?
Right,
like, that's
right.
difficult. But, you know,
some
we had
the very earliest demos we showed. I mean, remember the healthcare scenario? I don't know if you remember that one.
Right.
It was one of the very first sort of
yeah.
WPF demos we put out on Channel 9
yeah.
as it happens. Ben Rieger did a demo that we recorded, and it had this kind of notion that, you know, you're a doctor, you're going around seeing your patients.
Yes.
And if you take the detail of one patient, so the other kind of patient information just kind of folds away slightly. So it's that kind of smart, well-designed use of 3D.
Absolutely.
You've still got this live panel, but it's not now taking two-thirds of the screen. It's now taking, you know, like a quarter of the screen.
Absolutely.
And that makes a big difference then in terms of the ease of use and ease of navigation. It's very inductive to know how to get back to where you came
sure.
from because it's still there. It's just compressed.
And the other thing to keep in mind is, I mean, quite honestly, the keyboard and the mouse, they're going to be legacy at some point, especially when we get to, you know, multi-touch. There's going to be an interview
right.
on Channel 9 coming up soon
mm-hmm.
about some very interesting research that's gone on. And this isn't the same thing as Surface. Surface is brilliant in its own right.
Right.
But even Surface is a good example of that. Interacting with software with your hands I can see 3D playing a much larger role than it ever has before. And so that's something to keep in mind. Input devices are also evolving, and 3D will fit nicely into that space.
And actually, you have people on the team that have like these like little sphere things you can hold on to, and if you pick and move, you can kind of move in six axis, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah. Are you going to talk about the Wii Nunchuck integration in WPF 3.5 in this interview, or should we keep that out?
Yeah, we'll have to talk about it later. Okay, you know, like, you know, Friday night after we know, we'll have a few pints of Guinness.
Nice.
You better keep Guinness.
Exactly.
Are you a Guinness guy, or I thought you liked ales?
I'm more of a wine guy.
Okay.
And so really quickly here, we talked about the tree and kind of how you know, the input focus events all works.
Yeah.
You can focus a 3D element and keep track of the focused item, just like 2D. And this is the 2D on 3D stuff. And so it allows interaction to kind of happen between things. And so the name is, you know, describes what it is. Might not be the most obvious thing, but it's basically making it easy to do 2D and 3D and having hit testing working. To put things simply. There's probably more there. Ask Kurt. and so kind of cleaning up in our list of things and improvements. Again, tech support is something that people have been really excited about.
Right.
Look at the New York Times app. And people have been really excited about the New York Times.
Sure.
And there's a ton of other newspapers really starting to come out for the way now.
Seattle PI, and I forget who else is public, so maybe I should be quiet. Yeah. There's a number of them.
There's you know, just so people know, I'm not going to name all the names, but there's maybe 30 different newspapers that are all building on top of this reader toolkit right now. So, making progress.
And again, in talking about kind of the philosophy of our 3.5 work, great tech support, people are super excited, it enables all these great scenarios. Edges, what are the edges? And so our edges here, you know, better support for IMEs. So if you're doing input against non-Latin languages, you know, Japanese, Chinese, those kinds of things, substantially better support. And fewer bugs, did a lot of fixing there. Better index support. I'm actually not even sure specifically what this is, other than they said a billion more people can use their native language now on WPF, which is huge in terms of, you know, a lot of people in the world don't speak English as their first language or, you know, Latin language. And so
most people don't.
Most people don't. Vast majority don't. Right. And so a billion more people can use their native language now, which is great.
Nice.
And editing support, a bunch of work here to make sure that, you know, kind of the messenger type scenarios where you want to do, you know, a chat conversation and you want to have elements inside your text block, you want to have those elements be interactive, like having a link inside an editable surface, that kind of composition, allowing custom elements, and so maybe you don't like bold and italic and underline, and invent your new one. Exactly.
Blink, I want blink.
The blink tag. Tim, I'll let you put that in your bag of tricks, so I'm not going to touch that. But just cleaning things up, sensibility.
Yeah, it's nice.
And finally, something people talk about a lot is performance.
Yes.
Did a lot of good work here. Yeah. And already I mentioned, you know, we did work in XML binding, binding in general. We've actually did some changes in binding just so the blend or the expression blend startup time was at 5 or 6% faster because we just made binding much faster.
Right.
More targeted places, though, smoother animations. We actually did some work so that as things are moving slowly across the screen, you can see hiccups every once in a while. Mm-hmm. That's much better. We fixed some of that stuff. And then layered windows. And again, this is something, if you use layered windows, this will be a big deal. It was actually work we did at the service pack level in XP and Vista. And so you'll see this in SP1 and Vista and SP3 of XP. But now I'm dealing with transparency and opacity in windows. And one comment I heard from a customer was that this feature has now gone from being a toy to actually being useful. And so some really cool things there. And I think
you better quickly explain exactly what layered windows are as well.
Yeah, so this is the idea that, you know, I might have a pop-up and maybe I want to do... step back. I mean, you might know this better than I do, actually. I think about it. Like, you know, you might want to have a window that has non-rectangular borders or differently shaped borders. You might want to have a window with, like, a fade effect. Like, let's say you want to have, you know, have your header bar and have it, like, be, you know, slightly opaque and transparent to the to the desktop, for instance. There's some tweaks we had to do since we're a DX kind of based thing and Win32 and getting that clean, and so we got that fixed up. And so if you want to build these windows that have transparency back to the desktop or things behind, or you know even you know subtle opacity, making that so the performance is really good. And now it's like it should be up to snuff with the rest of you know things in WPF. And so much better. And these cool demos of like you know these 3D you know objects flying around the screen in XAML pad. And there's you know nothing hiding behind them. Like it works now and the purpose great. And so again, if you've used layer windows and hit those issues, you'll see that's much much better.
Yes, yes.
And if you haven't, now it's even better time to use it because it works much better.
Yeah, good.
So one last thing to talk about. This is you know in the confusion, the minutiae of of what Orcus is, what Visual Studio 2008 is, what the service pack is, like talking about those, like where do I get this feature? When do I get feature X or Y? We talk about it internally as red bits and green bits. I'm guessing this will probably leak to discussing publicly. So red bits are changes to existing binaries. So, you know, in WPF, that's Presentation Framework, Presentation Core, Windows Base. This will ship as a service pack to XP, so it'll be a service pack to, you know, CLR 2.0, CLR 3.0. It's included as Service Pack 1 when Vista, so when that comes out. And so, basically, that's everything in green bits. Like, all the fixes we did to binding, those are in red bits. Those are, you know, our old binding engine, we fixed it. The fixes in ADO are in red bits. 3D stuff, since it's baked in the platform, is in red bits.
Right.
Green bits is new binaries. And so I think it's system.core is where all the link stuff is now.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Those are new binaries.
Right.
System.xml.link is a new binary. So likewise, we have functionality in new binaries.
Mm-hmm.
And fundamentally for us, that's the added model and Firefox support.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of everything else is available in the service pack stuff. A few things for us are in, you know, these green bits. Again, if you want link and some of this other stuff,
right.
you'll want green bits. But it's
right.
important to keep in mind, like, some people might deploy Service Pack 1, and they won't have link.
Mm-hmm.
And so as an app author, making sure you understand what's deployed, how to detect what's deployed in your customer's machine, making sure they're the binaries you need is important.
Right. And the red bits bar is significantly higher in terms of, I mean, anything that's changed in the red bits cannot break compatibility, right?
That's absolutely your goal.
So when we ship .NET Framework 3 Service Pack 1 at some future date, that will include what you're describing here as red
yes.
bits, but you can basically guarantee to folks that we're not breaking any interfaces, we're not making any material changes that something somebody would be broken by installing SD1.
And see, guarantee is a word that an evangelist would use. Or and actually, what I'll ask people to do is, you know, assuming we're posting this video, you know, soon from
uh-huh.
when we're recording, go get beta 2 of Orcus Visual
uh-huh.
Studio. Visual Studio 2008,
uh-huh.
free download. If you have existing WPF content,
uh-huh.
run it.
Uh-huh.
Again, don't change it, just run
uh-huh.
the executable
yes.
and make sure it runs. And if you don't, get up on the forums, get up on Connect, and send us feedback.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, lots of great investment, people that went out early and had some
right.
fun.
Right.
You want to make sure that their investment's kept.
Yep.
And one other thing to keep in mind, too, is if you're using Orcus and you start using some of these new features, be careful who you're targeting, because
right.
you could say I'm not using these new DLLs, I'm just
right.
using binding, right? But if you use
right.
these new features and try to run it on a machine that doesn't
right.
have the new
right.
the new binding engine, the
right.
the gold release, those people will have issues.
Right.
We'll say
right.
that
right.
Vaguely.
So
keep that in mind.
So two things there then. Firstly, what we're effectively saying is anything that's broken on Service Pack 1 that was running on the base thing. That's a bug. I mean, that's what
and let us
saying.
Know.
So that's why I say about guarantee. Anything
right.
that's not
mm-hmm.
is just a bug in the software from
mm-hmm.
outside. And so then, as you say about checking, you know, don't just accidentally use some of these features because your application just won't work on it. It'll presumably blow up with a runtime error. How do people find out? How can you test on? You know, how can you like use? The system environment, is there some property I can test to see am I running 3.0 or am I running with added goodness?
I think the appropriate answer to that is, that's a great question, Tim. I know there are ways. I think the user agent string that's sent to the browser
uh-huh.
Has a little information
okay.
about, and it might include, are you doing 3.5 or 3.0?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, like, are you running 3.0 Gold or 3.0 SP1?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not sure about, and
okay.
so we should, you know, find that out before we post the video
the
and a link.
Yeah.
Because just like, you know, you don't want to deploy a 3.0 app to someone that's running just 2.0, not detect, have it blow up.
Right.
Kind of same thing here, you know.
Right.
Give our users a good experience, help them deploy the framework.
Right. We'll make sure that property's posted on.
We'll take care of that.
Cool.
Absolutely.
All right.
And that's all I have. So, again, you know, if you...
Is that all you got? I'm sorry.
You know, as I said, if you've held on this long, people probably, you know, those that care about, you know, the minutiae
yeah.
of PF,
yeah.
You know, we've done a lot of great work. You know, it was all about fixing existing customer issues, making them happy,
right,
extend
right.
the framework where we had some holes, make things good,
right.
and make sure we had great better together with, you know,
right.
the new stuff, added model, link.
Right.
And I think we've done a great thing here. WPF came out great, came out exciting, people were super excited.
Yeah.
It's only getting better.
Yeah.
And so this would be an exciting release for
yeah.
us.
Yeah, that's really cool. We've made a lot of noise about Silverlight recently for obvious reasons. You know, it's just come out, so we're just sort of you know, excited about this new thing, but it's really important to me that people don't think that WPF is you know, somehow deprecated by Silverlight or something like that. WPF really is the full thing. I mean, WPF mm-hmm. is the full enchilada, and Silverlight is this kind of, you know, the lightweight sort of runtime
sure.
version of it. And you know, hopefully folk can see from this interview, we're putting a lot of investment in the 3.5 release. You know, this is not the end of the drain. We're, you know, already
oh, it's only
thinking
beginning.
Very, very hard about what comes next, and I think folk can expect to see another release where we'll address, you know, some very, very interesting scenarios coming after this.
Outstanding. Well, hey, great to have you on here, Dr. Sneath, as
it's
always. Awesome to meet you, Kevin. You're a Niner, right?
Absolutely.
You spent time on Channel 9.
Yeah, you can go back and find Kevin Button
yeah.
if you're really desperate.
Oh, it's there. I remember
oh,
posting
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, check out my blog, The Bag of Tricks. People always have
yeah.
fun with that stuff. So if you're new to WPF, great set of samples there.
And your blog's just like a random number, right? Is it J-E-832?
No, it's work.
Or?
Work
okay.
has, you know, other stuff, but work.j832.com.
Work.j832.com.
And if you want to know, send me an email. I can explain.
Excellent.
All right. Cool.
Well, hey, great
Thank
to
you
talk
much.
To you guys
Thank
again.
You.
See you.